Since the hierarchy of your values dictates your financial destiny, if finances have been lower on your values and your spouse has been higher on their values, their values will dictate that money more than yours. I'm going to say that again. If a husband and wife are married, there's a teen there, and her values have been children, children's education, children's clothes, children's goals, etc., and his has been building wealth and finances, everything else, who's going to be running the money in the house? He will. Or in their dynamic, anyway, their family. Who's going to be running the kids? She is. So whatever's highest in her value is where she gains control and discipline and has power. And whatever's highest in his value is where he gains control and discipline and power. If you don't love the direction where your spouse is wanting to put the money, then you either have to negotiate with the where you have a power with them so they can negotiate that money over to you, or you have to go out and produce the income that's comparable or more so you gain control of the power of the money. Does that make any sense? Because if for some reason that can't be negotiated, you have two different value systems, then it is wise for you to learn how to communicate what's important to you in terms of what's important to them so they can feel that they're getting what they want by giving you what you want. That's your responsibility to sell that to them. Otherwise, it's your responsibility, if you want to go and put your money somewhere else, is to go earn the money to go put that on your own and create your own wealth, which is what I advise anyway. If we get a chance, even though that wasn't the primary focus, I will address a little bit about the dynamics of families and relationships dealing with money. I was going to get to that tomorrow, though, but let me do that. Make sure I do. By, say, 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, if I haven't addressed it already, make sure you raise your hand and let me address that, because that's a pretty crucial component. Because you can build wealth, and then half of it can disappear in a divorce, can't it? Then you get to find out that other half has really got some of that cash. Even though you might have worked, they actually worked for it too. In fact, I'd like you to write this down. I'll address this for just a second. If you're in a marriage, in a couple, and one earns 3 times the amount of money that the other one does, or is working and making the money, and the other one's not earning, quote, finances in the marketplace, but is raising a family and doing all the things around cooking, cleaning, fixing the house, and everything else, if you're the woman doing that and you got a husband that's working and making the money, if the husband's smart, he won't assume that's his money. And my advice is to negotiate an arrangement of what I call replacement value. And this is going to be very mercantile. And some of you are going to think this isn't fair in relationships, but just in case you haven't realized, relationships are a business. They start out with a dowry and they go out with a cost if you divorce them. It's a major cost. It's a negotiation, and even call it proposals, don't they? So what happens is you do a replacement value. So if the woman is basically working at the house and she is doing cleaning and cooking and nannying service around the house and shopping and everything else. If you had to replace all those duties and everything to the same degree, the same quality, what it is, how much would that cost? Whatever that cost is, whatever your income as the husband, you ought to take that amount and set it into a savings or set it into an account for that person and then let them pay their proportion of bills out of that account. Let them learn how to be accountable with their money, but let them be paid according to what their values are. And do not think that that is all your money because you happen to be working, because that's not really a fair exchange. And unfair exchanges lead to divorce, and then you end up finding out that half of that was theirs in the first place. So it's wise, whoever's making the money, to be realistic about that money in a dynamic called a marriage. And those assets are equilibrated. I'm assuming that, I don't know what the legal ramifications here are divorce, but I'm assuming that you have community property that divides. Am I correct here? Is that what happens here? So then that never was one person who did the work that owned that money. That's really community property. So that means that they have a right to communicate and desire what they want to do with that, and that has to be negotiated if you want them both to agree on that. It's a negotiation. If not, you go out and make the money, and you have your independence, and you figure out how to do your own money, and then you decide what you want to do with that money. My advice, This is not necessarily popular. You both earn and you both feed into the financial situations. You both help in, to some degree in managing the children, if you have children, but you both earn a living. Or you agree in advance that one person is going to specialize in one area and one's going to specialize in the other, but it's, we're going to pool the income. Because a male, because they may have a higher value on economics in many cases, will sometimes think that that's all their money. This is a very foolish thing for a male to do. If they want to be castrated, that's the best thing to do. Do you understand what I'm saying by that? Wisest thing to do is to realize that that money is a fund that goes into a common pool. But if you're both working, which is great, you're both making income, comparable income, this is your advantage. To keep some of those funds separate and some of those funds pooled. Some of those funds, because they would desire to live out their own values, which will be different. And some of those things pooled, so you can basically go off and build something you both agree on. My wife and I have two separate incomes, two separate banking systems or financial services, and we have things that are common. We do things that are common and things that are separate. She can do whatever she wants with some of her money. I can do whatever I want with my money, and then we have certain things we both agree on. This is, I advise you in this fashion. And I'll say more about this on it, and marriages and management of that and structures of that if you'd like tomorrow. Is that fair enough? But don't think it's your money if you're married. It's you're now two people as one. You're one person. And if you're going to get married, by the way, it's wise to marry somebody that's got equal power systems. They may have a power in a different area, but make sure that they have equal power systems, because the difference between the power systems is the tension in the relationship and the amount of work and tension and compression you have to deal with in that relationship. Equal powers. I'll elaborate again tomorrow on that. Any other questions? All right. I'd like to address this now. I've said that the hierarchy of your values dictates your financial destiny, but I want to give you a tool on how to shift your values. Because being in this program is going to do part of it. But I want to show you a tool on how to shift your values to make sure it moves higher on your value list, so you increase the probability even further on you seeing opportunities and acting in priority and save. So when you leave here, you're going to be saving, you're going to be seeing more opportunities, and you're going to be managing your money better. Is that fair enough? Very simple process. I just said you had a hierarchy of values. Let me give you the keys on how you know what your values are. So I want you to write these 7 things down, or 8, 10 things down. One is, how do you fill your space? This determines your values. How do you fill your space? If you go to my office, you'll see books everywhere. I've accumulated over the years 28,000 texts, 28,000 books, and I sell them as they accumulate to my students. So obviously, reading and learning is important to me. It's an evidence. What does your life demonstrate? That's what your real values are. Well, my life demonstrates by the way I fill my space that obviously reading and learning has been important to me. So how do you fill your space? My wife's situation when I first met her, it was shoes. I didn't believe in reincarnation until I met her, and I realized she had to be a centipede in her last lifetime because she had so many shoes. If I could convert those shoes back into cash, we'd have been very fortunate indeed. But the point is that how she filled her, because when I first moved into a little place in New York, we had a shoe store. It wasn't planned to be a shoe store. It's just you had so many shoes everywhere, I didn't have a place to hang my clothes. I'm joking a little bit, but I'm trying to make a point. How did she fill her space? My wife said that a woman, the quality of a woman is based on the quality of the shoes she had. I didn't know that, but now I understand that. The second is, how does she fill and spend her time? How do you spend your time? You tend to have and make time for things that are important to you. You tend to make time for things that are important to you. The next one is, how do you spend your energy? Where do you spend your energy at? That kind of correlates with time, but how do you spend your energy?